From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is being made in local schools today, where in some districts, students and staff are foregoing their masks for the first time this year. That move has not been technically approved by the state education department, but some local districts are making their own decisions this week. And here's how this has all been happening recently, because it's kind of been happening fast. Late last week, New York State Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker released a letter that he wrote to the CDC about masking guidance for the state. In that letter, he said that the state will try to align its guidance for school and summer camps, meaning children and staff who are fully vaccinated do not need to wear masks indoors or outdoors. The changes were set to begin today. But now, state officials say no plans will be adjusted until the CDC has an opportunity to respond to their letter. The state education department issued guidance yesterday, making it clear that the mask mandate remains in effect today as officials wait for a response from the CDC. Meanwhile, some local districts are making their own changes, some not requiring masking when they used to. Needless to say, district superintendents have had to navigate changing guidance and many back-and-forth conversations about what's next, what's safe, what's smart. There are only about 3 weeks left in the academic year, and it's been a challenge. This hour won't just be about guidance regarding masking, but we'll hear the latest from three local superintendents, and we're also going to talk about, you know, sort of where things are now, how things will be this summer, and how they envision things changing in the fall. I'll welcome our guests now, the superintendent of the Greece Central School District and the president of the Monroe County Council of School Superintendents is Kathleen Groutman. Kathleen, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Evan. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. Bo Wright, superintendent of Rush Henrietta Central School District and vice president of the Monroe County Council of School Superintendents. Bo, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And Gene Mancuso is superintendent of Honeyway Falls Lima Central School District. Gene, welcome back to the program to you.
Thanks, Evan. Nice to talk with you.
You're going to say see me soon enough, Gene. Soon enough. And you know, that's a reflection on how much is changing. 1 week from today, Connections will start regularly welcoming guests back to the studio. We'll do it slowly, you know, smaller guest lists at a time. But it's changing in a lot of places. And Dr. Groutman, I'm looking around, you know, schools. What has the last week been like as schools try to figure out masking and what you're supposed to do or what's advised, what's not advised? Can you kind of lay out the landscape of the last week or so with that?
Well, so I would love to say the last week, but it's really not. It's been since Friday.
Okay, so, last few days, right.
Really, which is, you know, sort of reminds me of the beginning of the year when we were getting regular changes to guidance pretty much daily. So this weekend has been really confusing and difficult for our community and for us as leaders in terms of figuring out and navigating. For most of us, or many of us, I should say, we were really struggling towards the end of next week considering the heat and the restrictions on the guidance as they currently are written for New York State Department of Health. Trying to imagine having all of our kids in school with no mask breaks and trying to imagine kids out in the playground in 90-degree weather and in classrooms that are oftentimes above 90, following that and adhering to that so closely. So I think those were some of the conversations and thoughts that many of us were having early in the week. And then some of us had gone ahead and made decisions towards the end of the week around making some exceptions and talking about lifting that for outside. That was prior to the changes that came out late on Friday, which were sort of mind-blowing for everybody because while I know they weren't official changes, they were written in such a way that sounded like New York State would be adopting them on Monday. It was shared, the media shared it like it was gospel and that everything would be changing on Monday. And our families, that's the message that they got. So that left us with the weekend of a lot of sorting out and trying to figure out what's appropriate. Who do we follow? We've typically not followed SED for health guidance. We followed the Department of Health, and they've still been silent. I don't know. I'm guessing Gene and Bo could probably add to some of that thinking just in terms of where we've kind of felt and what we've done as superintendents.
Yeah. Bo, you want to pick it up from there? Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing I want to do is to thank our administrators, teachers, staff, and families for their flexibility, patience, and support in all of our school communities during an unprecedented year. And I think what happened Friday only underscores the importance of getting very clear guidance in a timely manner. And I think the frustrating part for superintendents, which Kathy alluded to, is that this has been a pattern over the course of the past 15 months. And as we're having conversations around reopening and looking at what that's going to entail from a wider lens, I think that's what school communities are looking for, not just superintendents, but the people that work in our organizations and the families that we serve are looking for clear guidance that comes in a timely manner. Because when that doesn't happen, when there's ambiguity, and, you know, the truth of the matter is when these announcements are made, Evan, oftentimes superintendents are, well, most of the time superintendents are finding out the same time that families are finding out. So then families look to us for guidance and we're trying to decipher what it actually means. And in this case, I think if there was clarity and if people had time to actually understand and unpack it, then you avoid a lot of chaos over the weekend and on Monday mornings. And I think that's what needs to happen going forward. I think as we're looking at reopening, I think that we have to take a different approach, because otherwise, you know, superintendents and school districts are put into a really difficult situation. And in this case, I was actually, it was helpful that SED came out yesterday afternoon and provided some guidance, but it came out late. And at that point, the toothpaste was already out of the tube, so to speak. And then superintendents are left to have to make these difficult decisions based on, you know, tolerance within their own school community. So that's one of the things that I hope changes going forward, is that we can work collaboratively around these issues and get clear guidance in a more timely manner.
Superintendent Mancuso?
Well, I've been doing this for a long time, and back in the olden days, I was a soldier, and the governor actually used the term snafu today, and the politically correct way to say that is situation normal, all followed up. And I think our state and our country has never shown its diversity more than through the pandemic. We struggle with any information that's delivered because we try to apply it to our own individual lives. And when you do that as a society where me comes first and you try to do something that involves we, which is the pandemic, right? We're supposed to be taking care of one another. It's something that I think all of us prided ourselves in. I think when you get sudden jerks and shifts in decision-making, it causes people to question everything. And I see people questioning every aspect of society, which is wonderful, truthfully. Actually, in schools, we're pretty open about how we do business. I do feel, you know, a little disheartened, I guess, by the end of the school year by what I feel like is how I've struggled personally with dealing with this lack of clear and present rules. I get directives from a governor's office, the Department of Health, a local Department of Health, a Board of Regents, a state education department, my own Board of Education, my own teachers, my own collective bargaining units here. And at the end of the day, I'm in a little isolated, unair-conditioned space on a very warm day trying to explain our decision-making. I, you know, the governor today clarified that the mask wearing outside is no longer required. We're trying to align directives, because that's some of our dilemma, is trying to, you know, right now we're so far into this epidemic and pandemic, we have countless guidance documents. Nearly 300 different documents have been given to superintendents in the last 145 days, telling us what we can and can't do. And lots of times they compete. We have clubs and activities that happen on campus. We have a summer program that happens on campus. Those rules are different than school. And you can't explain that to people. It doesn't make any common sense. So the fact that today the governor clarified that masks are no longer required outside is a welcome change. But he also forecasted that we're unsure of what the rules will be for September. And I know, Evan, that's what we want to talk about today. Because, again, I think most of us, including superintendents, would love to do school like we used to do school, because we know how to do that. And so we're looking forward to those days as we struggle through these last few weeks of school.
Yeah. So before we get to what's going to happen in September, which really was supposed to be the whole focus here until the last few days when things got confusing, I think, is a fair word. I mean, when you read Justin Murphy's reporting, our reporting at WXXI, so many others, you see these competing ideas and the frustration that so many superintendents and their colleagues are feeling. So I'm just reading from Churchville Chilai's website here. Let me read from their website. Quote, "Like you, we are extremely frustrated and disappointed that the state continues to put school districts in this position and limiting local control due to the timing and lack of clarity between the state agencies, and given the extreme heat forecasted for this week, we will be implementing the following changes effective Monday, June 7th. That's today. Students and staff will need their face masks when moving throughout the school and during arrival and dismissal in our bus loops. Stand up, mask up. While seated in school and on the bus, masks will be optional but strongly recommended. Masking outdoors is no longer required. In addition, masking may be required during various activities during the school day, such as large gatherings, special events, etc. We will strongly recommend that unvaccinated staff and students mask in school, but we will honor their right to choose when seated. At this time, all social distancing protocols in our schools will remain in place." End quote. Kathy Groutman, when you hear that, does that sound reasonable? Is that, you know, sort of, is that in bounds? What do you make of what I just read there from the Churchville Chilai website?
To me, it sounds reasonable. We have struggled here in Greece, and we also made the decision around masking being optional based on the information that we had on Friday, with the idea that we were still asking students to bring a mask and that they may be asked to use a mask at different times during the day. I think for us, we're making the best decisions we can based on our community, based on the feedback that we've heard, based on the science. We've got an incredibly low positivity rate, and many of our schools have seen no positive cases in weeks. We have, vaccination rates in terms of staff above 80%, and in some cases way higher in some school districts. And we have a community. The other piece is that we have a community that feels really frustrated around the kids being masked all day in terms of, you know, within the heat and not getting breaks and so on. I think those are conversations. Those are all the data points, the science. The fact that Dr. Zucker, as the top medical professional of this state, would make a recommendation and send a note to the CDC saying they were considering this basically going maskless out or making it optional outside and inside starting Monday, tells me that the top medical professional thinks that that was a safe recommendation, or else why would he have put that to the CDC? So I think those are, like, that's the nitty-gritty conversation that we're all having around then what makes sense in my community and my schools and so on. So I think what Churchville was trying to do is identify periods of time during the day where we wanted to ensure kids weren't close, like when they're not social distancing, making sure that they had masks on, which is what we've said also. But also recognizing the fact that with social distancing in classrooms, kids are sitting socially distant. And so what we know and what we've learned is that we're not seeing transmission and spread, and that our numbers are low. So, I mean, those are all parts of the thinking. And then going back and talking to our boards of education and our community members, I mean, those are all stakeholders that we're connecting in.
Superintendent Groutman, I think before I turn to your colleagues, I just want to put a fine point on one part of this that I think is either confusing or something that listeners will want clarified. I think that a lot of people now are at the point where they hear, okay, masks are optional for vaccinated people, and that makes sense. Where people may struggle is the idea that masks are optional for unvaccinated staff or students. And can you explain your thinking on that and where we're likely to go with that, and frankly, where your district is with that right now?
Yeah, so we're still in conversations. I mean, at this point, we made the best decision we could based on the information that we had over the weekend, and certainly now on Monday, some people are weighing in. I think, you know, one of the things that we consider particularly with the elementary is kids are cohorted in the elementary, so it's different. Our secondaries are not all back, and so there's some different circumstances in different districts. But I've got a low number of students still back because we're still cohorting only 2 days a week at the secondary. Our elementaries are back, but they're cohorted naturally in that they're in the same classroom all day, and that their desks are apart. So I think for us, what was going through our minds in terms of the thinking process was we have many of the mitigation strategies still in place, and that made us feel safe around allowing them not to, if a student wants to remove a mask during the day. Now, I'll remind you, at the beginning of the year, that guidance around masking got more strict in April. We had managed the beginning of this pandemic and at our highest rates during the pandemic with kids taking mask breaks and having those off throughout the day. And then all of a sudden that became more strict. So again, now you go to a layman's perspective and try to make sense of any of this. And it gets really difficult.
Bo Wright, Superintendent of Rush Henrietta. What about mask requirements for unvaccinated staff and students right now?
Well, I think this, Evan, I think that I have complete respect for the decisions that superintendents have made across the county. I think each district has to do what's in the best interest of his or her own school community. I'm not a medical professional. And I don't want to be in the business of having to decipher certain medical decisions or to create my own guidance for my school district. And again, I think that when there isn't clear guidance, when there aren't requirements that come out for school districts, then this is what you get. Everyone sort of making their own interpretation about what needs to happen. And, you know, like I said, I think when you're looking across the county, each school district is very unique. Each has its own perspectives and its own needs. You know, in Rush Henrietta, we chose to follow the directive that came from the state education department, but recognizing that, we're expecting extremely hot conditions in our buildings, that we were going to have to demonstrate some flexibility, and the current guidance allows for that. Even before the governor's announcement today, most districts had made the decision not to enforce masking outdoors and to provide some flexibility for medical reasons inside because of extreme heat conditions. So, you know, while we are continuing to implement our masking protocols, we also recognize that we have to demonstrate some flexibility with respect to masking breaks, even inside, in terms of frequency and, utilizing spaces where students can distance themselves to the extent practical. But I want to go back to the importance of the state providing clear guidance, because that hasn't been happening. And then it leads itself to this situation where it's chaotic and people have to make their own assumptions or make their own interpretations. And, you know, Kathy mentioned what happens what happened in April when we were trying to reopen schools. Well, the CDC came out with updated guidance weeks before that. And so, again, districts are trying to take steps based on guidance that was created in the summer, and then begin to make investments in things like barriers or making certain safety decisions. And then all of a sudden the state comes out with guidance, which in some case made it more difficult for schools to open up. And I understand that the situation is challenging for everyone, but I just feel like there's a better way to do things going forward. There's a more collaborative way to do things going forward, and I think everybody benefits from that approach.
Yeah, and to that point, Superintendent Wright, there is the specific approach to schools and what the rules should be in schools and what Dr. Zucker has said about schools. And then if you read 45 minutes ago, Governor Cuomo said that New York State will lift all COVID restrictions when the state hits a 70% vaccination rate, And the state is currently at 68.6%. So, I mean, does that mean everybody? Does that mean, you assume that means you, Superintendent Wright?
So there are a couple points that I want to make. And one is that I think some of the frustration and some of the confusion that takes place is that in our everyday lives outside of school, people are having one experience where they're seeing things open up and they're masking less and less, and they're not seeing that same progress as far as opening some things up and lessening restrictions in school districts. And so I understand that confusion and frustration. And as Kathy mentioned, we're asking some of the same questions. I'll give you an example, right? Like when it comes to masking outdoors, where at athletic events and outdoor events where we're trying to enforce this masking protocol, and we're in this tug of war with parents and families when they're on campus, when at sporting events, people are socially distanced. There isn't any sort of safety concern. The research and the science has said that, there isn't transmission in these situations, but yet schools are still expected to enforce that protocol. And so I think you have to ask yourself the question, what is the purpose in that situation? And so I totally get it, but I also, to your first point around, should we be differentiating the way that we treat vaccinated people versus non-vaccinated people, I don't want to be trying to police that either. I think that there has to be some sort of a happy medium that makes sense from a scientific standpoint that will allow us to fully reopen our schools safely. And I think that there needs to be thought that goes into that, and I think that there needs to be communication around what it's going to look like now and in September. And I think that, again, there needs to be collaboration as well with those of us who are on the ground.
Sure. Superintendent Mancuso, I have a note from a listener named Kristen who thinks that what we're missing here is that if kids can't be vaccinated, and most kids still can't, then we can't be lifting mask mandates when we're indoors. That schools should be the exception, that it should not be a surprise that we would still have these mandates, and that we should all understand that this is for the protection of kids who are too young to be vaccinated. Do you agree or disagree with her there, Superintendent Mancuso?
Well, first I'll go back to your question, Evan, and point out that that's not exactly what the governor said. As a matter of fact, on his slide that said when we hit 70%, New York will open, there was a subparagraph that said, except for the following, and it listed schools, hospitals, and correctional facilities. And people hate when I do this, but I'm going to do it anyhow. Those are the three groupings that have almost everything in common. We build the same buildings, we mass feed, we mass transportation, and we mass house individuals in hospitals, schools, and in correctional facilities. And to the listener's question, she's correct. Students under age 12 can't be vaccinated because there's no emergency authorization for any vaccination for a child yet. And so you look at what mitigation strategies should work. And this is where I also think Americans, we struggle to unlearn. I keep trying to say to folks, one of the best things that I ever do is all weekend long, I get anxious notes from parents about how unsafe or unwelcoming school will be today. And then I watch all the kids come into school and put their masks on and go about their daily business or finish the sporting event. They just ran a mile without their mask on, come to the sidelines, and kids put their masks on because it's just they're fine with them. I think what we have to get used to as Americans is, hey, if the rate is so low in the community that it's safer to come out of your house and do things, we have to walk ourselves through that process. And in school, we call that scaffolding. And then scaffolding is maybe the first time, you're at the lumberyard without your mask on. And then maybe you're willing to go to Wegmans without your mask on and then go for a walk. And I think in schools, if the rate's so low, the rates have never been as low as they are today. We haven't had a case in HFL in 3 weeks. Is it time to take our masks off? And again, I think that's where I like the idea of where our superintendents are is local control, because you really depends on the community. Because, again, you also have to be ready to shift back. Suddenly we have an outbreak. Understanding with kids without a mask in a classroom together, they're all close contacts, right? If we get one of the Indian variants that they're talking about in Britain, that suddenly appears in a school in New York and a bunch of young kids become ill, what happens? I think the other issue, truthfully, Evan, that's hard for lots of us in Rochester is many of us didn't experience COVID firsthand, and superintendents were in this weird spot of where we've had students hospitalized and then students with no symptoms but tested positive, and this whole spectrum, and trying to recognize that we have a whole bunch of anxious people on both sides of this issue, and trying to walk that fine line of doing what's best for kids. Again, you know, trying to make a difference. We all got into this to make a difference for students, and, you know, we want to make that difference. And the best way to make that difference is make sure that we're open. And so whatever rules we have to follow to keep kids in school as much as we can, as I'm in for. And hopefully we'll get the clarity and guidance. And again, if it means that our mitigation strategies, we don't have to mask anymore because the rate's so low, I'm thankful. But what did we learn? What can we keep going? Because, again, I think we know that we've learned some important lessons over the past few months.
And how do you feel, Superintendent, about high-risk kids? I mean, if you're a parent of a high-risk child listening to this conversation, you might think, am I going to be able to send my child to school before vaccinations are widely available for kids?
Right. And I think, truthfully, parents have had those opportunities always in public schools in New York State. It's been almost 35 or 40 years that New York State, you know, authorized schools to provide home and hospital instruction to students who are unwell enough to come to school. They're still receive a free and appropriate public education. It might not be what, you know, is happening in school the same way or the same length of time, but it's access to that curriculum. And I think that process has always existed. It's, again, how do we, you know, every student is different, every child is different, every set of needs is different, and making sure that we can meet those needs. Again, sometimes it's a lot easier done individually than in a class action. We know that we've seen large mandates happen where someone needs X number of services when maybe all students don't need that kind of support. And then there's other students who don't seem to need a lot of support, but suddenly you find out, hey, you know what, they're being treated with chemotherapy and other things, or there's other issues going on that we need to be aware of. So I think there's lots going on here, and trying to, again, to get as many students to be able to be in school as often as possible. Every student every day remains my priority.
Well, let's take our only break of the hour, and when we come back with the superintendents who are with us, we'll answer some more questions from listeners if you've got them, and we're going to look ahead to September and get a sense for where they expect to be, not only when it comes to school reopening, but when it comes to you know, communicating with parents about those safety measures and whether we can be back as sort of close to normal as possible by then. You just heard Gene Mancuso, superintendent of Honeyway Falls Lima Central School District, Bo Wright, the superintendent of Rush Henrietta, and the vice president of the Monroe County Council of School Superintendents. Kathleen Groutman is the superintendent of Grease Schools and president of the Monroe County Council of School Superintendents, and we are right back with them next. Coming up in our second hour, I hope you stay with us for a conversation with one of the greatest storytellers I've ever had the pleasure of talking to, a man with a much better radio voice than mine, and he does it without even trying. Michael Lasser is retiring. He's been the host of Fascinating Rhythm on WXXI. He's an author, an award winner, and a chronicler of American history through the Great American Songbook. We're talking music with the great mind of Michael Lasser next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So we've been talking about the last few days and sort of the maelstrom that was unleashed with the back and forth between the New York State Health Department, the Education Department, the CDC, and looking at masking guidelines right now. But let's look ahead to September. Superintendent Groutman, should we expect that come September, Grease schools look pretty close to normal, and by that I mean pre-pandemic normal?
I am very hopeful for that, for sure. I know, you know, what we've been advocating for and hoping for, and again, this depends on the virus, right? So I think the hard part for us is we can't predict and we don't know what might happen with variants, but in our perfect world, if we continue to see this really low rate, and we continue to open things up. When you heard Governor Cuomo say today 70% is the magic number and we're opening up, and you know, they talked about aligning guidance with the camp guidance. Well, the camp guidance, camps are happening in our schools. So when they're talking about all this, you know, opening things up and taking masks off, those are all happening in our schools this summer too. So as I think about the fall, I do see things much more normal. I do think There are some things related to distancing that we can be more mindful of. I think that there's protocols and mitigation pieces that we have just become acclimated to that, like, are just part of the way we do things now. I think parents are more mindful about not sending their kids to school sick. But I don't see, I guess, there being such overt measures that we had to have this year, as long as our numbers stay good. So that's in my perfect world how I see it happening. I think, and we're advocating, the other piece that we're advocating is for more local control, because, you know, one of the things that's been frustrating in this whole situation is that, you know, blanket numbers are used for a region. You know, well, in Gene's school, he doesn't have a case for 3 weeks, and yet he is kind of lumped into some bigger data pieces. So we've asked specifically as a Monroe County group around looking more specifically at our district data. We've looked at more specific control with our boards of education while considering and obviously using the guidance from the state. So I feel like if we could get to that point, it gets to the point that Beau made around it allows us to be more collaborative and thoughtful around decision making so that it's not just things dropping on a Friday at 4.
And then if I could just ask a follow-up to you and then we'll offer Beau and Gene the chance to comment on their districts and what they look at for September. I get myself in some trouble on this program sometimes when I talk about the fact that kids do pretty well with COVID. And because people point out, and they should, and I understand it, that doesn't mean that all kids, but it certainly means the vast majority of kids, the vast, vast majority of kids, for whatever reason, and reasons that I hope that eventually we'll have an even better understanding of in the future, they do well on COVID. They don't get deeply, deeply sick. It's very unusual to see any child die from it. It has happened. I understand that. I'm observing that because there is nothing that comes with no cost at all. If you are treating somebody with cancer, with chemotherapy, the chemotherapy can cause that cancer to essentially, I'm not a doctor, dry up, go away for a while, close to be cured. I don't know if cure is the right word. But chemo comes with a cost to the patient. And what you weigh is it worth it? Is it the right thing to do right now? Just as a lockdown and restrictions at schools and things like that come with costs beyond just saying, hey, we're making sure we're not spreading COVID. What's the cost to kids if we take away sports, if we take away activities, theater, if we wear masks in schools, all that stuff? So I want to ask you if you feel like it's compelling that kids do pretty well, knowing that some parents view that as like a flippant dismissal of their children's health, and I don't want to do that, or if you feel like, no, caseloads are low enough, vaccination levels are high enough, that we don't think COVID will spread to kids, even if we tell them you don't have to wear masks in school and you're not vaccinated. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if I understand your question completely. And I don't think people want to be reckless about just like we're abandoning masks. I think the minute a conversation starts, people want to make it like they're not wearing masks. The point is, in all of this, masking has been completely recommended, strongly recommended. And we also want to recognize that everybody feels comfortable without a mask. So, I mean, I think that's going to be our landscape for a really long time. Even with some of the things that we relaxed for today, the majority of our kids in schools today are wearing masks. You know, but having said that, I guess I want to your point around the impact. I think kids do well with COVID. I see a lot of kids that haven't done well. I see a lot of kids who've really struggled this year with their mental health and where their engagement and their connectedness. So I don't want to, take that lightly or diminish that in any way, because I think that has been seen and heard. I think we're going to see a huge impact of that in the fall as we welcome hopefully all of our kids back. And again, my hope is that all of our kids are back. My hope is that we can use as some basic things around social distancing if need, like when we can, and also masking if we need to, like when we can't social distance or when we're bringing groups together. There's probably some things that are going to need to continue for a while. I think the piece that I struggle with is this like blanket edict that, you know, when you look at the way that the health department writes something and says, you know, masking all day, no breaks, I think that's ridiculous. So to me, I feel like that's where a school and given, you know, your data and given your community and mm-hmm. given, you know, the other mitigation strategies in terms of the building, I think we can make good decisions about how this looks. And that was what was happening in the fall when we were at our highest rates, is kids were taking breaks. They were wearing masks, but they were still taking more breaks and sitting at their seat without their mask on because they were socially distanced, which is what I'm proposing and what we want to do now. With the lowest rate.
Gotcha. Okay. Superintendent Wright, let's look ahead to September. What's it look like in Rush Henrietta?
Well, I think all school districts in Monroe County right now are planning for a full reopening, in-person instruction 5 days a week. But I think to an extent, you know, we're sort of flying blind, right? We're making decisions based on what we anticipate the guidance will be. So as we were creating our budgets, you're building in lines to make sure that you do have at least some allocation for PPE. You're making sure that you have at least some allocation to handle what you anticipate disinfecting protocols will entail. You're looking at what's going to be required from a programmatic perspective and trying to anticipate what may happen with remote learning or what's going to be needed to address learning loss. But again, I know I sound like a broken record, but what really needs to happen is a situation where we get reopening guidance before the end of the school year so that we can begin planning and know what exactly is going to be expected. That way there's no ambiguity. Like I said, it's a situation right now where everybody's planning for a full reopening, but you're trying to anticipate what the guidance is going to be. I will say this, Evan. There are, as much as I want things to be quote unquote normal, there are aspects of what we did this year that I hope we don't lose. From a programmatic perspective, I think that we utilize technology and engaged kids in ways that we haven't done before. And when kids come back to school, I hope that we don't lose that same spirit of creativity, that we look at blended learning opportunities and opportunities to infuse them into a more traditional classroom setting. I actually had the opportunity last week to sit with a group of high school students, and I was able to reflect on the year and get feedback from them around, you know, what worked really well over the course of the past year, what things didn't you like, and what would you like to see us incorporate going forward as we think about a new, more traditional school year. And all of them talked about, you know, the flexibility in terms of the academic program that they appreciated, the fact that they got the opportunity to be a little bit more independent as far as their learning went. The other piece that I've noticed and also came up in that conversation is centered around equity. I think we were much more focused within our organizations, not just here in Rush Henrietta, but I think with all school districts in the county, in terms of giving students the support that they needed individually to help them be successful. I think we thought about that in very different ways. And the kids talked about that too, in terms of, you know, more flexible grading processes and, you know, teachers posting assignments and a syllabus so that they could see further out what the expectations were going to be. And the willingness of teachers to try and utilize methods sometimes that were a little unorthodox to try and support kids. You know, Wednesday in our district has typically been a day where that was all remote learning and kids weren't on campus, but we did have principals and teachers that were bringing students onto campus to make sure that they were completing work and to give extra help. And so, you know, those aspects of what we did this year and what we learned, I hope that we don't lose. I'm like everyone else. I'm eager to get back to a typical school year and get back to a more normal situation and to put 2020, 2021 in the rear view. But I think we've learned some really important lessons, and I hope that we don't lose them. In a system that typically can move at a really slow pace, we showed that we can pivot really quickly, mobilize really quickly. And like I said, I think as difficult as it's been, I think we did some really good things for kids, and I hope that that's continued as we look to a new school year.
Superintendent Mancuso?
Well, my colleagues are bright and smart individuals, and you know, my thinking is along the same lines, except maybe a little larger in grandiose scale. I think the first thing that we learned in the pandemic is that people struggled with critical thought. Interpreting large amounts of information and then being able to analyze it and make a personal decision is something that lots of us as students weren't trained to do. We were trained to answer A, B, C, or D, true or false, or maybe write an essay on fiction. And we've done an amazing job over the last several years of recognizing critical thought. But I think trying to work with our communities and having the same conversation and understanding that it matters for all, and all students, all humans, have to have some critical thought understanding. Everyone's a voter. Everyone's out there. I also think that reinforcing the digital skills that we already have has been tremendous. I think we found out that some of the artificial intelligence and some of the software packages that our teachers thought didn't mean anything before, they mean more now. I also think that what Bo just talked about was customized learning. I think, you know, with today's technology, you have an ability to scaffold teaching and learning like we've never had before, with the ability for students, all students, to have access to intensive tutoring, whether it's online or in person. But the biggest thing we learned is you cannot replace the social aspects of school. There is something very human about getting together to learn. And that necessity, you know, we have a small percent of kids who were fully remote, who were highly successful, but we have a larger percent of students who were fully remote who simply were not successful. And lots of that has to do with the importance, not just of their teachers, but of their classmates, of, you know, the memories that most of us have about school revolve around our friends and classmates, good or bad. That's where they revolve around. And the importance of that, of being together in school, cannot be understated. Because, again, I agree with Kathy. I think some of, you know, Kathy, Bo, and I were at a conference Friday afternoon looking at Katrina, what we learned from the people that had a similar aspect, the only similar aspect to us in America, the schools down in New Orleans who didn't get to open for 8 months, and what they've learned. And what they've learned is that you don't fix this in a year, that you have to be in this for the long haul, that there are students, our most needy students are still behind and maybe even farther behind, and we're seeing that in some of our own data. Recognizing we have a short amount of time with some federal infusion of funds to do some high impactful things, but also being committed to trying to see where students are and take them from there and try to do all that we can. So I'm looking forward to every student every day in the fall. I'm a little leery. A little bit of news came out today saying the CDC is going to give us some new guidelines right after schools in New York let out. I hope it's sooner rather than later, because I think, again, it's been my experience, if you give me a goal, I can hit it. And I think that's what Bo and Kathy and I are all in favor of. Us. Give us a clear goal. Tell us what you think school is going to look like. We'll make it happen. We just need to know what the rules are.
Can you just go ahead and make plans without waiting for the CDC? I mean, can you explain why you haven't just said, look, we've got too much competing advice or guidelines, I'm going my own way here?
Well, I all of us are certificated in the state of New York. And early on in this pandemic, all of us, at least I did, received notes from different folks who reminded me that my certificate is held by people at the State Education Department, and that there's lots of school attorneys and other folks that remind us all the time that our personal liability was on our reopening plans. I think that's why you have three superintendents on the phone. We were the only people required to sign our back to opening plan. Our school superintendents took on full indemnity or for the well-being of our students by governmental order. We all had to sign our names, not our Board of Education presidents. Superintendents had to sign the reopening plan, and we swore we would keep kids safe. That's a huge responsibility. You think that was every day, but truthfully, that's been very different. We've never had that. We've always been an employee, too, of the school district. Those members of the board are our employer, and we work for them. This is the first time where we really placed on that hot rope of saying, nope, all these decisions and the safety of students belongs to you as an individual. I'm looking forward to getting back to the centralized school district approach, getting back to the system of governance that more closely resembles what normalcy outside of emergency executive orders looks like. But again, I think that's, we're a little gun shy, to say, hey, this is what September is. I can give you my vision. I definitely clearly have one. I have a vision for not only this year, but for the next several years. But I want to know what new obstacles are going to get in the way, because there's always some, but what are they, whether they're financial, whether they're structural, whether they're class size. Tell me what they are so that we can best prepare our school districts for the future.
Superintendent Wright, I am curious to know, too, if you want to weigh in on not only the idea of just sort of charting your own course while everyone else seems to have conflicting ideas, but let me also read this note from a listener named Melissa, who says, Evan, I'm listening to the superintendents, and I'm trying to figure out what they hope will happen moving forward when it comes to decision-making. It seems like this entire year has had a lot of finger-pointing, and the latest confusion over the mask-wearing is a perfect example. So in a perfect world, what do the superintendents want moving forward? Do they want 100% control of their districts to make their own decisions, or do they just want to be told by the state or told by the county, you have to do X, Y, and Z, et cetera? Why so much finger-pointing? That's from Melissa. What do you think, Bo?
I have a couple thoughts on that. I think, in situations where you're talking about public health and safety and issues, related to the medical aspect of this whole thing, you need public health and medical experts to weigh in. And I think in those situations where we were looking for clear guidance. And I think it makes sense to have the experts weigh in there. Kathy and Jean talked about the importance of having control over decisions locally where it makes sense. And certainly we're in a position when it comes to the decisions related to academic programs or, general decisions that are made related to the way that we're going to operate or facilities and things like that. I'm more than willing to take those on. But I think, with those decisions that have to be made at the state level or have to be made by a medical professional, what we're asking for is just clear guidance that comes in a timely manner. Jean talked about, the danger of getting out too far ahead of the guidance, and that's real. I'll give you an example with reopening, because we were trying desperately to get students back to school. We took some bold steps to try to make that happen as the state sat silent. And, we at that point purchased barriers. Here in Monroe County, they came out and said that, they would support schools in doing that. So we took those steps and I communicated with my families about what our next steps were going to be to get students back K-12. And literally 24 hours later, the state decided to speak on the issue, and the guidance ran completely, in a lot of ways, contradictory to what my plan for fully reopening was at that point. And I had to backpedal. So outside of the issues that we deal with around certification and liability, from an organizational perspective and from a communication perspective, if you get too far out, it can cause serious problems for you as a leader with your school community. So I'm looking for, Evan, a healthy balance between being able to make the decisions at a local level that makes sense for us to decide on, But in those cases where we can't, where it has to be decided by, but something has to be decided by the powers that be, out of the governor's office, because it impacts other entities outside of schools, or because of medical reasons, that we get that clear guidance in a timely manner.
I only have 30 seconds, Superintendent Grabman. Final thoughts from you on this. Could you go on your own on this?
I'm going to go back to what Bo said in terms of there is a place for the state in all of this in terms of providing guidance. And from the medical world, like he said, I'm not a medical professional. I do want guidance. I want guidance, though, that's responsive. And I think that's the other piece. Bo said timely. My problem was throughout this year, the landscape changed, and we got updated guidance once, which I think is ridiculous, because we had to update throughout the year based on the conditions, and the state basically did that once. So I want timely, I want it to be responsive, and then I also want more local control, because I do believe I have a 9-member board who are smart people, who are represented, they're elected. They have me as a superintendent, who that's my job, to make decisions. Yeah. So I want more control at the district level to be able to do this in the best interest of kids.
And superintendent, this is a yes, no. Can you make staff, can you require vaccination for staff? Sounds like no.
No.
Okay. Sounds like the majority of staffs are vaccinated, but some will not be. That will be their choice. Superintendent Grabman, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Evan.
Superintendent Wright, same. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Superintendent Mancuso, thanks for the time, sir.
Great day.
All right, more connections coming up in a moment.